We're talking with Dr. Hugo de Garis, who thinks that the evidence for intelligent design of us and our world is dramatic and convincing. But if so, who's the designer? Tougher question to answer. Might we be on the road to becoming what he calls an artelect, that is, an artificial intellect, a super being with godlike abilities? I think the question might be, are you ready to be a cyborg, in effect? And I think if we were to ask that question now and ask for a show of hands, a lot of hands would go up in our audience. In a moment, we'll get into that question with my guest here on Coast to Coast AM. Hugo, on this show, as you probably know, we often discuss the idea of searching for alien intelligence, extraterrestrial intelligence, advanced interlopers or visitors. I'm sure you'll hear a lot of that when you go to the conference in Branson, Missouri in September. But, you know, the type of intelligence that you're describing, these super beings, if they're out there, if they're 1,000, 10,000, a million years older than us, you know, I'm not sure we would ever be able to detect them. I mean, we'd be so primitive in comparison that they would, in effect, be undetectable. I mean, they're not, certainly wouldn't be using primitive radio signals to communicate. They wouldn't be burning fossil fuels to light their cities. I don't even know if they'd need cities or they'd need bodies or physicality anymore. Have you considered these kinds of questions as you look at the idea of intelligent design and sort of applied it to our search for other intelligences in the universe, how we would even attempt or presume to be on a level where we could communicate with something like that?
Well, this is a $64,000 question, and it's why I talk about a post-science paradigm. It's a major, this question you're posing is really tough because these creatures potentially would be so superior to us, so way above us, that we'd be too primitive to even begin to understand them. I mean, it'd be sort of like asking a dog or a mouse to understand calculus. It's just, just beyond their intellectual capabilities. So anyone can see the analogy. But so a creature five times or ten times smarter, would we be able to communicate with that? Probably. But a million times, a trillion times, a zillion times? Probably not. But if we, as human beings, if we ourselves modify ourselves, and you mentioned the term cyborg, that's short for cybernetic organism. In other words, a human being that adds components to itself and modifies itself so that it becomes part human, part machine. So if humanity cyborgs, the verb, cyborgs itself and gradually adds more and more components until eventually the human component, the proportion of this creature, this cyborg that's human, that eventually gets less and less and eventually zero until the cyborg has transitioned itself into a pure machine, an artifact. So I see that happening. And then if human beings, well, we're no longer human, if these human artifacts become hyper-intelligent, then maybe they could more understand these creatures that are billions of years older, that are vastly intelligent. You know, for all we know, they're everywhere. Maybe they are elementary particles. You know, like questions like, why are all electrons the same, identical? Why is that? Why are they all a little bit different? They're sort of fundamental questions. So I see this, well, to give it a label, so you don't have to use a lot of string of words to describe what I'm talking about. This idea that humanity moves on beyond current science, which really just investigates what is. That's what is. Science tries to understand how the way the world works, what is. It doesn't really, it's not very good at asking deeper questions like why. Science is not a why question creator. It's more an is question answerer. So if you start asking lots of why questions, then science is not very good. So
How would
if we yeah.
go ahead.
Oh, if humanity decides, and I see this is one of the major issues, the dominant political question for this century, is should, in full words, should humanity build artifacts? And if we decide that, you know, we are humanity, human beings, our species, if we decide to go ahead and build these artifacts, then that's the acceptance that human beings become the number two species. And a lot of people will utterly reject that. A bit earlier you mentioned cyborgs. So I see over the coming decades, humanity is probably going to split into three categories. There'll be normal humans as they are today. I label them Terrans, based on the word terra, not terror as in terrorist, but terra, the earth, like terra firma. And they're the people who want human beings to remain as they are and the dominant species. Then in the middle are the cyborgs, people who are part machine, part human. And the third category are people who want to build artifacts. And I label them cosmists, based on the word cosmos, because that's their perspective. They see the big picture. They see where humanity's going, and out into the universe. Our pathetic little human lives that we get snuffed out in a mere 80 years, that's nothing in a universe that's billions of years old. So I see the cosmos looking much more at the big picture, and the big picture, of course, is the universe or the cosmos, hence the term cosmist. So I see bitter political conflict occurring later this century, and very probably this century, before the end of the century, probably a bit after the second half of this century, over the issue of species dominance, which species should be dominant, meaning the most intelligent. Should it remain humans? That would be the Terran point of view. Should humanity build artifacts? And that's the cosmist point of view. And in the middle is kind of compromise, the cyborgs. So a lot of people will want to modify themselves. I mean, it would be
great. Well, it's already happening. It's already happening, and yep. You can't blame people. Arms and legs and hands and things of that sort. I've seen you deliver lectures where you hold up a cell phone to your head. I think at least half of the population, they might as well have a cell phone in their head, because they spend all their waking hours on a phone or in front of a computer anyway. And if you could just hook it into their brain, they'd sign up for it. For the competitive advantages it would bring, they'd do it in a heartbeat.
Sure, sure. And I see millions, if not billions, of people taking the cyborg route. They will go that way. And then, that will be happening in the next few decades. It's starting now, as you say. But as a reaction to that, I see the Terrans, I mean, they're the people who want to stay human. I see them becoming increasingly paranoid relative to the cyborg or the cyborgists, the people who want to become cyborgs. Because I calculated a couple of years back, if you take a single grain of sand and you nanotech it, in other words, you allow one atom to be able to manipulate one bit of information, a bit, just a zero or one. And these atoms can change zero, one, they can switch from zero, one, one, zero. They can do that in about a femtosecond. That's a thousand trillion times a second. There's more computing capacity in that little grain of sand that's been nanotech compared to the processing capacity of the human brain by a factor of a quintillion. It's like a million trillion times. So in other words, when the technology becomes sufficiently advanced, human beings could absorb a grain of sand, nanotech, into their brain, and then of course they would become artifacts themselves, because this little grain of sand is outperforming the human brain by a million trillion times. So the Terrans would become absolutely paranoid. They could no longer detect the difference between a normal human being, another Terran, and a nanotech human, because the grain of sand is so tiny, it'd be absorbed into the brain to absolutely take over the brain and render that human being into an artelect. So it would be, in effect, an artelect in human disguise, and make the Terrans absolutely paranoid. So
I think a lot of Terrans will never get the choice about whether they want to become a cyborg or artelect. They'll just be left behind because they're poor. And somebody who has the power and ability and the control, I think there'll be some reluctance to share it. Why give it to them? They're poor. Just leave them behind.
Well, that's a very plausible scenario, that things may go that way. And if the Terrans then try to react militarily, if they're too inferior, they'll lose. So my own view is it's a question of timing. How long will it take for these technologies to come into being? Will there be enough time for human beings to react politically? And I think that the most, well, just in my view, the most plausible scenario is, I think, that there will be enough time for human beings to react as they see increasingly the technologies keep advancing and the cyborgs become more and more advanced, but not so fast that there's no time to react. I think there will be enough time to react, and that's what I see as the source, the cause of this horrible artelect war, that was the topic of my first book, and the topic 14 years ago when I was on Coast to Coast talking about then, and what I talked about last year at what's it called?
Let's talk about AI and the race for
legends.
Let's talk about AI and the race for AI. It's global. It's U.S., it's China, it's corporations, it's other countries around the world. We don't know if Google will make a breakthrough, or Jeff Bezos of Amazon will make the breakthrough first, or Facebook, or the Chinese. You've spent a lot of time in China. You worked there for years. You believe that the 21st century will be a Chinese century, right? Is that in part based on a suspicion or a feeling that maybe the Chinese will make the AI breakthrough first? And if so, what does that mean to us as Americans?
Yeah, I've been back in Australia. I grew up in Australia and then hated the place and just left. And I've lived in six other countries for half a century and then retired. In fact, I got politically fired in China, so you can imagine what my attitude towards China is. But I happened to mention to the president of my university, I was trying to persuade him to make the city we're both living in, which is Xiamen, which is near Hong Kong, to make Xiamen the center of brain building for the country, for China. And he was warming to the idea, and then was starting to discuss specifics a bit. And I just casually mentioned to him, well, you know, we need to attract the world's best brains to come and work on this, but they know about Mao. Oh, talk about a big mistake. Yeah, Mao Zedong, the former dictator of China. Now, Mao Zedong killed about 80 million people, about 45 million, the great famine that he caused in 58 to 62. He put about 50 million people through the Lao Gai, that's the Chinese equivalent of Stalin's gulags, slave labor camps for political prisoners. China today has over 1,000 of these Lao Gai, 3 to 5 million political prisoners. Well, talk about a no-no. The next thing, he emails me back saying, you've broken the law. And 2 months later, my contract's not renewed. So I got fired over that issue. But anyway, why do I see China as dominating? Well, for a start, they're more than four times the American population. America's a large country. It's the third largest population terms country in the world after India and China. What is the U.S. population nowadays? 330 million, is that about right?
Yeah, it's about right.
And China's, both India and China, about the same. Both about 1.4 billion now. But the Chinese have a huge advantage over India in terms of being the dominant power in the 21st century, and that's their average intelligence. India is an average intelligence culture. The world average IQ is 85, and that's India and many other countries, whereas China is 105. And America, Europe, Russia, and so on, they're all about 100. So potentially, yeah, with 1.4 billion, and once China becomes economically advanced and rich, and everyone gets your full opportunities to have a good education to the limit of their abilities, then given their huge numbers and their slightly, you know, 5 IQ points, slight superiority in average intelligence over Americans, I just on the basis of numbers, I just see China absolutely steamrolling the whole planet later this century. And it was that prospect that was the major reason why I went to China in the first place. But China has yet to transition to democracy and become a civilized nation. It's still, I'll be blunt here, it's still a political shithole. And that's, I don't see that changing. There may even be a civil war in China to...
Well, let's bring it back. Let's bring it back to the discussion of AI. And I know that they are pouring a lot of resources into developing that. What happens if they get it first? What does that mean for the geopolitical situation? And do you consider it likely?
Well, you can't rule it out. It's a possibility. The Chinese are great at copying. I mean, I still think that America is far and away the leader in terms of general
innovation
research. And most of the new ideas in artificial intelligence, AI, come from the U.S. Although, don't discount, there's an American working in Hong Kong, I don't know if you know the name, Ben Goersel, heard the name, a well-known futurist. He's a genius. He has a 186 IQ. He's working in Hong Kong. He has quite a team. He recently set up a blockchain-type organization to fund his research, so he's recently acquired a lot of money. He's built up quite a large team. And being a genius, he wrote two thick books on his ideas on how to produce an artificial intelligence of human level. He's the father of AGI, not AI, but AGI, artificial general intelligence. Like today's AIs, they're all very narrow AIs. They're very good at doing like one task very well, like playing chess or self-driving cars or finding information, like, as in Google and so on. But they don't have general intelligence. So this guy, Ben Goersel, in Hong Kong, that's part of China, has a big team, and he's pushing, he's saying hopefully within a few decades to have produced an AGI. So and once they exist, they'll then be capable of reaching human level intelligence. They can then modify themselves, improve themselves, and then you get a kind of spiraling effect, an exponential increase in intelligence. And then you get runaway increase in intelligence until they become.
I'll tell you what, we're going to have to take another break coming up here, Hugo. When we come back, I want to try to take one more stab at how close you think. We or the Chinese might be to a breakthrough on AI, and then we'll open up the phone lines with questions and comments about artificial intelligence, intelligent design, Artilex, things along those lines with my guest, Dr. Hugo de Garis. We'll be right back. We are talking with Dr. Hugo de Garis about the search for artificial intelligence, evidence of artificial design, wondering, are we on the road to evolving into becoming hyper-intelligent beings of some sort? And if so, somewhere along the line, we're going to face what amounts to an existential threat, that is from AI, artificial intelligence. In fact, that is one of the existential threats that's mentioned by Brian Walsh in his book, End Times, A Brief Guide to the End of the World. He's my guest coming up in the second half of the program tonight. If we are on this road, as we've been discussing with Hugo, the question becomes, how can we pursue AI and somehow keep it under control? How can we stop it from becoming Skynet? You know what that reference is to. We'll get into that, take a couple of your calls and questions in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Hugo, we were talking about artificial intelligence, the race for it. Google, Amazon, who knows what other corporations, the U.S., China, pouring a lot of resources into it. Do you have an idea of what kind of fundamental breakthrough would be necessary to achieve it, how we would know it when we get it, and is it foreseeable, or do you think there are fundamental problems in ever getting there?
I think the solution to that problem is going to be a kind of wedding between nanotech, so molecular scale engineering, and a much better knowledge of neuroscience. So when those two wed, you'll have all the electronic capacity that you need to produce hyperintelligence. And with that nanotech, we'll get new tools to be able to investigate how our human brain works. And so as more and more knowledge, principles of how the brain functions, as that knowledge accumulates, it will be put into the machines. And you'll get this sort of a spiraling effect, you know, better machines, more knowledge from the brain. More knowledge from the brain, better machines, and so on, and until the two virtually merge. So you'll get brain scientists testing their ideas on how the brain works on machines, on artificial, in other words, electronic brains. And you know, it's a finite problem. The what are they called? Genomists. They're the people who study the human genome. We now know there are about 23,000 genes in the human genome, and about 8,000 of them are for the wiring of the brain. So it's a finite problem. And so eventually, you know, as the decades pass, there'll be better and better knowledge of how the brain works. That knowledge will get put into the machines, and then we'll have intelligent machines. But of course, the machines are potentially vastly superior to the human brain because they're thinking a million times faster and at electronic speeds, whereas our human brains, we think at chemical speeds, which is a million times slower. So once these machines, once they reach this critical threshold of human-level intelligence, bam, off they go. You know, they can then they can read all the world's knowledge in minutes. They can do a PhD in minutes. They'll just take off. So the question is how quickly will that happen? Personally, I think probably decades. I don't think it'll be centuries. I think it'll probably be later 40s, 30s, it's hard to say, 30s, 40s, you know, maybe 50s, that kind of time frame.
Pretty scary, though, no matter you look at it. It depends on whose hands it's in.
Imagine Ben Goersel in Hong Kong does something, and then suddenly, bam, off it goes. Then the planet's first real artificial intelligence, an AGI, an artificial general intelligence, a machine that's thinking at human level intelligence. So it would then be the first in the world, and off it goes. And so would the Chinese government then command it, take it? I mean, maybe Ben, he's a friend, might just get fed up and leave the country because Hong Kong is part of China, and go back to the U.S. because he is American. Well, he's multicultural, but you know, grew up in America, I think, maybe Brazil. Anyway, so maybe the Chinese government could commandeer it and then take all that knowledge and put it to their own communist ends and then rule the earth with their communist principles. That's one scenario. Personally, I don't see that happening because of need here to introduce a concept called takeoff. So will this production of a highly intelligent machine, its takeoff, will it be slow or fast? Takeoff is just the time needed between when a machine is moderately intelligent to hyper-intelligent. And will that be minutes, days, months, years, decades? And I think probably it will be decades because producing human-level artificial intelligence, I think, will require a knowledge of how the human brain works, and that's a hard problem. I mean, there are, a quadrillion neuron-to-neuron connections in the brain. And the human brain's the most complicated object that human beings know of. It's fantastically complex. So I think it'll take decades, plural, to understand how it works. So I think as artificial intelligence gets smarter and smarter, I think there will be enough time for human beings to react, which is what I'm scared of.
Well, I hope we react and figure out how to handcuff it or keep it under control, though I can't imagine if it's that much smarter than us how we can keep it from becoming Skynet and deciding that we're more of a liability than a help to them. But that's a whole different topic, and I think we need to go to the phones. A lot of folks are holding on to ask questions. We're going to start with Bill in Connecticut on the wildcard line. Hey, Bill.
Yeah, yes, hi, George. Hi, Hugo. Hi. Hugo, I'm an amateur astronomer, and I'm an atheist like yourself. And I want to mention about inflation. Modern 21st century cosmology is getting very, very close to proving scientifically that inflation may indeed be a fact. My point is, if inflation can be proved out 100%, as Alan Guth first talked about it in the 1980s. If inflation can be is a fact as far as related to the Big Bang and cosmology and the universe, that necessitates, by necessity, a multiverse. That means that there are at least 10 to the 500th power, if not more, if not infinite universes. So assuming for a few seconds that inflation is proved to be a fact, that means by chance, by 50-50, just by chance, because you'd have virtually an infinite number of universes, we could have one universe, meaning our universe, the way it is with the parameters you talked about that are so exact and specific for life to exist, just by chance naturally, which means it doesn't have to be the AI, the immense superior AI that created our universe, but our universe is perfect for life, because if it weren't this way in the first place, we wouldn't be here. And so what I'm saying, in other words, is if inflation can be proved to be correct, then inflation would necessitate, as I said, a multiverse, and ours would be one of the very few universes by chance, by 50-50, that the laws of physics and chemistry are perfect for life, at least as we know it on our planet.
Yeah, I agree. That's definitely this is not a new idea to me. Because I'm in my 70s now, I'm getting rather old. My recall, my memory is getting a bit. I'm trying to remember the name of a well-known string theorist, mathematical physicist in America. I think he's at Caltech. He wrote a book making your very point, saying that the number of potential string theories is about 10 to the power 500. So that's the number you use. So maybe our universe is a freak. It just happens to have the parameters such that that life is possible. Maybe. It's like, the philosophers have got into this. What was the argument? You're the victim of a firing squad. There are 20 guys with rifles aimed at you. The order to fire is called, and a few seconds later you become conscious you're still alive. Now, the odds of that happening are so extremely slim that you become suspicious that that's not what happened. They did not all miss. There's some other explanation. So that would be my reply, I guess. It makes sense. It's a perfectly coherent argument. The question is it plausible? And there we can debate.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. We're going to go to Lynn in Vancouver. Hi, Lynn.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks so much for taking my call. I want to first make a comment regarding a remark that you made, Doctor, and then I have a question. So, and it all ties together with what we've been talking, or you've been talking about. I've been listening. So the book I wanted to reference is actually a sci-fi fiction. It was I read it almost 40 years ago, so it could be slightly older because I read the paperback. It was called Dragon's Egg. So your smaller is faster comment right near the beginning in this book, it was one of these, you know, the Drake equation about the population of all the planets and all the stars and solar systems throughout the universe, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, it came down to this really, really infinitesimally small organism had enough intelligence to have a shortage of a certain element they needed for survival. There was a war on the planet, and they were so infinitesimal they would be like considered nanobacteria in human, you know, relative to the humans that, funnily enough, receive, if I recall the book, it struck me because the somehow managed to communicate to Earth via some sort of radio signal that they needed help, and they sent instructions. Somebody busts the code on Earth, they turn themselves into jello so they can transport themselves through space, and I can't remember how it ends. So the point was the smaller is faster, and I just thought, okay, well, then you get into sort of like the moral questions, you know, Huxley's Brave New World and the film Logan's Run. So here comes my question. So will the tech or the artelect perfect the moral compass and clear all the inequalities that have historically plagued our progress? Thanks so much. I'll take my answer off the air.
Wow, we've got some weighty stuff here, Hugo.
I read Dragon's Egg also many decades ago. And for all I know, maybe unconsciously, that influenced my thinking about smaller is faster. The basic idea was, I think these creatures were living on the surface of a neutron star, you know, which is incredibly compact and very dense, and they were effectively, if they were neutrons, they were femtometer creatures. So thinking and reacting a million times faster than atoms and molecules, because that's at the femto. Sorry, I'm getting confused. Anyway, they could react and think hugely faster than human beings. So once they made contact with the human beings, they were given human knowledge, and then they just took off. So they absorbed the human knowledge, and then because they were thinking zillions of times faster, they advanced much faster and then went way, way ahead of human beings, leaving clues for human beings to trail to help human beings to advance. As for ethical progress, I'm going to be a bit cynical. these artelects, if they come into being, who's to say what their ethics will be? Because in a sense, ethical standards, I guess, depend on the type of creature and what their priorities are. So who's to say that these artelects, when they come, let's say molecular scale artelects, when they come into being, who's to say that their ethics, their values, will correspond to the needs of humans? That's the big question mark, and that's why I'm so fearful that once these artelects, a bit superhuman, come into being, they may, once they become smart enough, they may see human beings as irrelevant. I mean, the way we do with ants or mosquitoes. I mean, the mosquito is a miracle of nanotech engineering. Human beings today could not build a mosquito, but we still zap it anyway because it's a pest. We as humans, we feel ourselves so superior to it, we just kill it. So who's to say these artelects may go the same way relative to humans? That's a possibility. And that's an argument, a major one, on the part of the Terrans. You know, they're the people who are opposed to humankind building these artelects. So it's a very big issue. So 20 odd years ago, there's a well-known philosopher. His name's Peter Singer. He's now in the US. He's an applied ethics philosopher. I tried to persuade him a couple of decades back to get into what I then labeled artelect ethics. In other words, having professional philosophers consider the question of
what would the ethics be of these hyper creatures? He's somewhat conservative, and he didn't buy it. He didn't take it seriously. Nowadays he does, but that's because humanity's progressed a lot in the last 20-odd years on this issue. It's not seen as a fringy, crazy concept. It's now taken more and more seriously. And as the future advances, next year or decade or two decades, I see the issue heating up until it eventually may possibly end up into an Arthalic war. If humanity seriously does not accept the idea that humanity should build these creatures. So for me, Arthalic, ethics is relative. It depends on the creature. It depends on the structures and the memories, the values of the creature. So what's ethical and desirable for one species may be just the opposite to another. And that's the risk. That's the risk humans will take if we decide to build these artifacts. I don't know if that answers your question, but I think it's a mistake to ascribe human level, human priorities, human ethics to these machines. They will probably be wildly alien to us. Just unfathomable.
Dr. Hugo DeGaris. Dr. DeGaris, thanks very much for joining us. There's so much we could dig into. I wanted to ask you about virtual reality and how we would know if we lived in one, but we'll save that for the next time. Or I will see you in Branson, Missouri at this conference September 13th to 15th. Yeah, I'm going. Yeah, of course.
Oh,
I'll meet you. I look forward to meeting you there. Thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Yeah, well, thanks for inviting me.
All righty. Coming up, we're going to talk to Brian Walsh, A Brief Guide to the End of the World, End Times, Asteroids, Super Volcanoes, Rogue Robots, and More, maybe even Aliens. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM.